which was little short of a disaster. It had now been rechristened the Emperor's New Groove, a transparently desperate attempt to make the story, set in the Inca Empire, seem more hip. The original drama and musical score had been almost entirely discarded in favor of a light-hearted comedy. Groove was now scheduled for a Christmas release, with Atlantis pushed back to summer 2001. Only Remember the Titans, a Jerry Bruckheimer production based on the true story of the integration of a Virginia high school football team, made on a non-Bruckheimer budget of just over $30 million with no big stars, turned out to be a solid hit, grossing over $100 million. Still, the success of Titans was just what Eisner needed to feel that his decision to get rid of Joe Roth and his return to the low-budget singles and doubles strategy had been vindicated. He extolled this wonderful and moderately budgeted motion picture in his annual letter to shareholders. Peter Schneider had green-lit the project on the proviso that the script, which was riddled with profanity, be rewritten to eliminate all four-letter words, so the film could be marketed under the Disney label. However odd it seemed that no member of a 1971 Virginia high school football team ever swore, it nonetheless was precisely the kind of family entertainment Eisner wanted more of. Eisner's real excitement was reserved for Pearl Harbor, which he was forcing Peter Schneider and Bruckheimer to bring in on the sharply reduced budget of $140 million. Coming Memorial Day weekend, we have as close to a sure thing as you can get in this business. Pearl Harbor, produced by Jerry Bruckheimer and directed by Michael Bay, the same team that brought us The Rock and Armageddon, with an all-star cast headed by Ben Affleck, Eisner wrote shareholders. Wait a second. I take back that this is a sure thing. That is bad luck. It is not a sure thing. It's an absolutely fantastic, probably successful film that should surely draw a significant audience. In contrast to the rosy optimism about the Internet expressed by Eisner just a year earlier, in the 2000 letter to shareholders, he sounded a cautious, even defensive note. Disney's Internet group was now characterized as embryonic and evolving. But unlike many Internet businesses, ours is based on solid assets that should help power this cylinder to performance down the road. Yes, the Internet group currently posts losses, and yes, that really concerns me and our management. In many ways, today's Internet environment is reminiscent of Disney's early days. Walt and Roy achieved moderate success experimenting with silent cartoon shorts. Then came what we today would call a killer app. In this case, synchronized sound. The Disney Studios produced the first sound cartoon starring Mickey Mouse, and overnight Disney became a household name. The Internet is still in its infancy. But we are closer to the day when it will be transformed into a true entertainment medium, and our company will once again be poised at the cutting edge, and helping us out will be Mickey Mouse. It could be argued that this is exactly the kind of visionary thinking a chief executive should possess. But it was also what Steve Bornstein, the person in charge of the Internet group who was somehow supposed to wring a profit out of the assets, found so frustrating. The truth was that Mickey Mouse was not going to rescue Go.com. In February 2000, Bornstein convened a meeting at the Team Disney building to confront